Yes, it's okay. Sometimes it's like that. I mean, guilty as charged. I mean, sometimes I'm a little tired. Fortunately, I developed a fix for this. I figured out that I need my coffee on Sunday. So I want to recommend it. kind of found it by accident. Leroy hooked me up one Sunday, brought me this cup of coffee. Found out he didn't even really make coffee. So I heard, yeah. But it worked out. And interesting, how many of you all have ever actually suffered amnesia, like in real life, where you've actually forgotten, like, maybe your name, where you were or something? Anybody? Yes? There's a few people. Okay. The pilot, you know, there's people. If you've ever suffered amnesia, then maybe this won't apply. But how many of you can think back to a special occasion or a special moment, like you remember what you were doing on a certain day, like, I don't know, 30 or 40 years ago, a long time ago? Yeah, I see some nodding. You can think back to where it was like, okay, on this day, I remember what I was doing. I think, like, when you think of, like, weddings, when you get married, I remember what I was doing. I remember my wife was very, very late, like, abnormally late. Like, I don't get nervous about this kind of stuff, but even I was kind of like, ain't nobody supposed to be this late. One of these days, I'll tell you the story about that. But this day, 28 years ago, do you remember what you were doing this day 28 years ago, 1989? Probably thinking, what in the world does that have to do with anything? I remember where I was right now, February the 12th, 1989. I'll come back to this towards the end because I want to tell you a story about it. But we've been talking about sacrifice. And I want us to think about sacrifice, especially today, in the context of us being sacrificial, the way that Jesus was sacrificial and giving his life. And the title of the sermon today is No Identification. We have a way in which we think of ourselves. We think of how we're identified, how people view us, what people think of us. And I want to look at this from the standpoint of Jesus. And I want us to think, just a question. When you think of following Jesus, what's the first visual, the first thought, or the first word that comes to mind? Just considering, like, what do you think of when you think of following Jesus? Like, I know some people, they think of this, where it's like Jesus is walking down, you know, by the Sea of Galilee or something, and large crowds are following him. You know, you kind of have that visual in your head, or you think of him sitting and teaching. It talks about how he's teaching the people. And you had people who were like his inner circle, the disciples, they were following him. And you had others who were just kind of, you know, they were interested. They wanted to follow him. They were entertained. They were trying to see what the next miracle was going to be, or they wanted to hear this different teaching from this guy. And so, you know, we have all these different visuals and ideas when we think of following Jesus. But sometimes we limit our thoughts and we limit what comes to mind when we think of following Jesus. And we only think of it as following him in his life, but it doesn't stop there. In John chapter 12, we just read this. I'll read it again, starting in verse 20. It says, "Now there were some Greeks among those who went up to worship at the festival. They came to Philip, who was from Bethsaida in Galilee, with a request. 'Sir,' they said, 'we would like to see Jesus.' Philip went to tell Andrew. Andrew and Philip, in turn, told Jesus. Jesus replied, 'The hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. Very truly, I tell you, unless a kernel of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains only a single seed. But if it dies, it produces many seeds. Anyone who loves their life will lose it, while anyone who hates their life in this world will keep it for eternal life. Whoever serves me must follow me, and where I am, my servant also will be. My Father will honor the one who serves me.' Now my soul is troubled, and what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour? No, it was for this very reason I came to this hour. Father, glorify your name. When we think about following Jesus, the crowds and hanging out while he's teaching and watching him perform miracles may naturally come to mind. But the essence, as we see here, is not just following him in his life and imitating the way that he walked. But he says, it was for this very reason I came to this hour. Father, glorify your name. Jesus came to die. Ultimately, he came to die. Now, it took him some time because he had to show us some things. He had to teach us some things. He had to give us some things first, but he came to die. And when we think of Jesus and following him, sometimes we miss that ultimate sacrifice. We miss it not because we don't understand it for Jesus, but it's almost as though we think, well, Jesus came to die. That's what he's supposed to do. That's what he was. That was the whole, when we read through the scriptures, that's exactly what he came for. That was the promise. That's what the prophets were talking about, that he was going to come to die. But we forget that we have to be willing to die as well. Think about, is it all worth dying for? And we think about what it means to have a life with Christ and how it's only truly beneficial if we're willing to sacrifice so that others can benefit. You know, in the Bible, it talks about dying to self and taking up your cross daily. It talks about how you have to be willing to do this, otherwise you can't be his disciple. And we're going to look at that in just a second. If we're going to follow Christ, we can't just follow him through the life. We have to be willing to follow him to the death. Our sacrifice is not just for us, but just like Jesus was saying in this passage, our sacrifice is so that other people can see God's glory. Jesus, you see him constantly saying, not my will, but your will. He was submitted and resigned to the fact that he was going to have to die, not so that he could be glorified, not so that we could be glorified. He had to die so that God could be glorified. People see God's glory in your sacrifice. We have to remove ourselves from the equation, and just like Jesus did, realize that it's not about us anymore. It's about him. You die so that you can produce seeds that will eventually grow. You know, one of the hardest things to do is be willing to die for people and sacrifice for people on a personal level sometimes, because sometimes we feel like, I don't know if that person's worthy. I don't know if that person deserves it. And yet we see here with Jesus where literally all the seeds that have been produced, including us, were we really worthy of that death? Did we really deserve? Did we do something to earn Jesus' sacrifice on the cross? And we know the answer is no. But as we live and as we follow Jesus, we have to remember that at some point, there comes a time for you to not only, again, imitate his life, but you have to imitate Jesus in being willing to die to self for other people, being willing to sacrifice, yes, even your own life for other people. And we also need to remember that we shouldn't seek to get anything out of sacrifice for ourselves. We're expected to sacrifice if we're going to be disciples. This is not just something for the, like some people say, the super saved or the super Christian or those who are really, really committed. It is in the contract. It is in, you know, what is written. This is what you're going to do. If you're going to follow me, you have to be willing to follow me all the way to the end. See, the disciples didn't really understand this until long after Jesus had come and lived and died. And it wasn't until he came back that it was like, oh, they had that eureka moment. It was like, I get it now. I understand what all of this was for. True story, when I was in Atlanta, there was a guy, his name was Jeff Long. They called him Box. Box was a professional bodybuilder, okay? I remember I started working out with Box. Charisse, she's kind of grinning because she remembers how I would come home, right? I worked out a lot, but it wasn't until I started training with this professional bodybuilder. He was ranked, he's retired now, because he was actually close to retiring even back then. This was probably about 10, 11 years ago. And I think he was ranked as high as maybe fifth in the world. Like, he went to all these competitions. I mean, this guy, he was just amazing, you know. And I remember him telling me before we started training together, because at the time he was just, you know, we were talking and conversating, whatever. And he said, look, I'm going to tell you right now, if you come work out with me, it's going to be great. You're going to see the results. You're going to get huge. You're going to get ripped. You're going to be strong. You're going to be all these things. You're going to see the changes all through your body. And I did. He said, but I'm warning you. You're going to cry. You're going to throw up. You're going to have like these, it would be these headaches, but they weren't even really out of pain. It was almost like you were just in fear for the next workout, right? He was like, you're going to be dehydrated. You're just going to, because it was intense. But he kept telling me, you know, he would tell me stories about he talked about Ronnie Coleman. Those who don't know bodybuilding don't know who Ronnie Coleman is, but he was this guy. He went 7 times in a row. I actually saw him at the Olympia in Vegas when he won his 7th consecutive Mr. Olympia title. And he was telling me how he would work out with these guys because they all kind of worked out in these same circles and grew up together, and they'd be in all these competitions. He said, and right before the competition, Ronnie Coleman, he would look just sloppy, and he wouldn't be in that big, you know, great a shape. But within about 6 weeks of the competition, it was like he would just change. And he would just be super intense, you know. But he was telling me, he said, yeah, it's good. It's cool. It sounds good to do what I'm doing in the gym. It sounds good to eat like I'm eating until you're actually doing it, because then it's painful, because then it hurts. And see, for a lot of us, as we were talking about that visual of what it means to follow Jesus, sometimes we don't even take inventory of what it looks like to die and sacrifice the way that Jesus did, you know. We think of them following him and sitting in circles, and it's like, you know, looks like vacation Bible school or something. But then we don't think about this. See, because what we see in the picture is Jesus hanging on the cross, literally bleeding out. We see the soldier there with the spear wanting to pierce his side. But we don't, we sometimes forget that somewhere down below that picture, there's people mocking him. They're casting lots for his clothes. And you say, well, how can I do that for people? Am I willing to do this for my brother? Because Jesus, he didn't just do this for, you know, Peter and John and every, because keep in mind, those were his closest friends, but they left him. They scattered. They were afraid. But that's what he was dying for. Are we willing to sacrifice ourselves in such a way that we're willing to die like Jesus did for people who don't even love us, don't even care about us, who don't even appreciate us? That's the sacrifice. That's dying to oneself. I won't leave it there because it's gruesome, but we forget the pain. I remember when I was younger and I studied the Bible, and this guy, he was sharing with me, we call it the cross study. And they actually went through and talked about what crucifixion was. It wasn't like, okay, you just die, like you go into the gas chamber or you instantly die or something. No, it was torture. It was grueling. That's what dying was. It was being flogged. It was actually having to carry a heavy wooden cross down a road by yourself. That's what dying was. So when we think about the cost of following Jesus and the sacrifice we have to make, we have to remember that that's part of following Jesus too. Being willing to do this for the ungodly, for people who don't care about God, for people who don't care about us, for people that have hurt you in your past, for people who have hurt your family. In Luke chapter 9, if you'll turn there, this will be the last scripture we read. In Luke chapter 9, starting verse 21, it says, Jesus strictly warned them not to tell this to anyone. And he said, the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and teachers of the law, and he must be killed, and on the third day, be raised to life. Just a point, a little note there. It says, he must suffer many things and be rejected. And notice he says, by the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law, and he must be killed. Following Jesus means rejection. It means you're not going to be accepted by everybody if you're truly, as they would say, about that life. If you're truly going to serve Jesus and follow him to the death, you're going to face rejection. The thing about the chief priests and the elders and those people is that you would think that those people back then would understand. You would think that they would get it. You would think that they could relate in some way. Because those are the people who were considered the most religious and spiritual and in touch with God's plan. And see, we, as God's people, right here in 2017, part of that sacrifice is we have to understand that there's going to be a lot of people out there who we may expect them to understand our life. We may expect them to understand the sacrifice that we're making. Why it is that we spend so much time giving and serving and doing for others. Why we spend so much time praying. Not even for ourselves, but for other people. We may expect people to understand it. But we're going to face rejection. Continuing on, it says, then he said to them all, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross daily and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will save it. What good is it for someone to gain the whole world and yet lose or forfeit their very self? Whoever is ashamed of me and my words, the Son of Man will be ashamed of them when he comes in his glory and in the glory of the Father and of the holy angels. It says that we have to lose ourselves. That's why the title of the sermon was No ID. You know, it's like I remember talking to my wife about this one time, how she said, you know, being married is such an adjustment. This is a long time. She said, being married is such an adjustment in that it's like you feel like you're losing yourself because you're becoming this other person and you're losing yourself and you're saying, I'm serving my husband, and I'm serving my family, and I'm serving, and I'm like, I don't see myself anymore. That's a real concern. She's like, I'm just like, I don't want to lose myself. But you have to. You have to lose yourself if you expect that marriage to last, if you expect that marriage to glorify God. You got to lose yourself because it's not about you. There are plenty of times when it's like, man, I do not feel like waking up and doing fill in the blank, like the word anything. Sometimes you don't want to, but that's what it is. And notice it says daily. You got to do this every day. It's not like I'm going to do this one time and then tomorrow, I'll come back to it on Wednesday. I'll come back to it when I feel like it, whenever that is. We have to be willing to say, you know what? I'm going to deny myself. I'm going to lose myself in Jesus. People aren't even going to recognize me anymore. People aren't even going to know who I am. Because all they're going to see is Jesus. They're going to say, How? I don't understand it. As bad as that person treated them, how can they forgive them for that? As difficult as it is to love this person because of all the ways in which they behave. See, it's easy for us to love somebody who is fun and happy and we get along well with them. It's easy for us to hang out with our friends. But to love somebody who has already hurt you, to love somebody. I heard a lady, we were at a marriage retreat yesterday, and this lady was sharing about her husband and how he had a relationship before they got married. And she said, I knew that I was willing to be like Jesus when in my heart, I knew that I could share the gospel with this woman from my husband's past. I knew that when I got to the point that I could share the gospel with my abuser, the person who would be, and it was a family member, but when I'm ready to share the gospel and love this person and help them find a relationship with Christ after years of abuse, that's when I know that it's Jesus working and I've died to myself. Because see, here's the thing. Even though it may be hard for you, you may be thinking, I don't know if I would do this. I don't know if I would sacrifice for this person. What we all know is Jesus would do it because he's already done it. If we're going to follow him, we also have to be willing to do it. And I was telling you earlier, this building right here is called Covenant First Presbyterian Church. It's at 717 Elm Street, downtown Cincinnati. Now, back when I was young, the church that we used to go to, they didn't own their own building. So we rented this building out for Sunday morning service, right? And we meet at 10 o'clock and, you know, you have service, do whatever. And the reason why this building is significant, I mean, it's a beautiful building. Like most people in Cincinnati, it's they know this building. It's right next to a very famous building called Music Hall, where they have a lot of the symphonies and the orchestras and different performances that come there. But this building, Covenant First Presbyterian Church, I was at this time, 28 years ago, in this building. And I actually wasn't as nervous then as I was now. But I remember the Bengals had just lost the Super Bowl. I'll tell you a funny story about that some other time. But the Bengals had just lost the Super Bowl the week before, or 2 weeks before, and I was 13 years old. This guy, that was me, I said my I do's there. I made a commitment that my identification and who I was known as and what I was before was no more. This, at this time, right now, 28 years ago, I remember where I was. I'll go back because, see, what happens is in this building, like the cathedral, everything was great, but they didn't let us use their baptistry. I think I told this story before. I had to go down to this really dark, cold, it was a wet, dreary day, just like it is today. And over here off to the side, there was a hallway that led down to the basement. There was this tub baptistry. The water, I promise it looked like it was like toxic. I mean, it was just dirty. But I go down and I remember getting in this water. I remember getting in this water and I was so comforted that it wasn't for the cleansing of the outside because that wasn't going to happen. But I get in this water and I remember this day at this time right now. It was right after service. Just a handful of people. This guy's name was Marvin Espy. He was there. My parents were there. My sisters were there. This guy's name was Steve Berry. He studied the Bible with me. Taught me so much of what I knew. He was there. And they were saying, you're a young man. There's a lot that's going to happen in your life. A lot that you don't know. Are you willing to make the sacrifice and make Jesus first? Make him Lord of your life. And he will tell you what to do. They said, you haven't even lived. You're 13. Are you sure you want to give up your life now? And I said, yes. I said my I-dos. This young, thin, happy looking guy, this day, February 12th, at noon, that's when I got baptized. That's when I said, Jesus will be first. That is a sacrifice that is not to be taken lightly. It's the most important thing you ever do. And I want to close by looking at a few things. When we think about what it means to die to self, we have to always remind ourselves that we have to follow Jesus not only in his life but in his death. Carrying our cross is not optional. Too often we treat it as though it's optional to love people. We give conditions and parameters. It's not an option to deny yourself and take up your cross and carry it if you're going to follow him. Shame and rejection is to be expected by men. When we think about losing our life and sacrificing our life and our identity and what makes us, our dreams, our aspirations, our goals, people will laugh at you. They will criticize you. They will mock you. They will tell you that you're crazy. They will tell you you're stupid. They will try to just take advantage of you. They want you to lash back. Like when Jesus is on the cross and they say, if you're the king of the Jews, why can't you save yourself? Come down from the cross if you have all this power. That's what they say to us. If you've got so much God in you, then why don't you do this? Shame and rejection is going to come from people who don't understand what the cross means and what it means to deny ourselves. Are you ashamed of the cross? One of the things that we forget about Jesus, when he goes to the cross and he dies, only one of the disciples was there. Everybody else scattered. He told Peter even before he was taken, he said, you're going to deny me three times before the rooster crows. This is a battle and a fear that I've been dealing with for 28 years. Every single day, I have to wake up and say, I'm not going to be ashamed of the cross. I'm not going to be ashamed of the message. I'm not going to put anything that's a priority over Jesus and his sacrifice. Are we ashamed of the cross? Are we afraid to pick it up, wear it proudly, knowing that there's going to be some mocking and some ridicule that's going to come with it? And have, in some cases, have you given up on carrying your cross? And more importantly, are you willing to pick it back up? You know, we were talking a few weeks ago about Edith and her deciding that Jesus is Lord and she's going to take up her cross daily. But we also have to remember that that came with Rose saying, you know what? I'm going to pick my cross back up. Because there are going to be times, and I've, for myself, it's been true, where we don't always carry our cross. We don't always sacrifice and die to ourselves. But are you going to pick it back up? Are you going to start over? Are you willing to say, you know what? Forgive me, Lord. I'm sorry, but I'm going to pick up my cross and I'm going to be a new man or a new woman from this point forward. Are we willing to sacrifice in that way? Because it's easy to sacrifice. You know, we know the passage where it talks about, you know, that occasionally someone will die for a good man, but for a righteous man, no one's willing to do it. Like, we'll do it for somebody who we think deserves it. We'll do it for somebody. We'll die for someone. We'll personally sacrifice and face harm for somebody who we think is worth it. But what about somebody who isn't worth it? Are we willing to pick up our cross for them and sacrifice for them? Are you ready to carry your cross daily? Because when we think about what it looks like to sacrifice for Jesus, when we think about what it looks like to die to ourselves and deny ourselves, it's not just sitting around and watching Jesus turn two fish and five loaves of bread into enough food to feed thousands of people, but it's actually going to the cross. It's digging deeper and saying, you know what? I know I'm sleepy. I know I'm tired. I've had a hard week. I'm struggling. My husband is sick. My wife is sick. My child is having problems. I'm having a difficult time in my marriage. Whatever the struggle is, what we have to do if we're going to follow him and say, you know what, I'm going to dig a little bit deeper and I'm going to sacrifice more, because sacrifice comes where there's going to be some pain, some inconvenience, there's going to be some struggles. But none of that stopped Jesus from going to the cross. Are we willing to take up our cross daily? Are you going to take up your cross daily going forward? Have you ever decided? Maybe it's time for you to decide to take up your cross daily. Maybe this is that moment for you, like it was for me 28 years ago, where you're going to say to yourself, you know what? My life ends here. My life ends and stops right here. And going forward, I'm going to be known as God's boy. I'm going to be known as someone who serves and imitates and lives like Jesus. Is this that time for you? Is it time for you to finally pick up your cross and commit to that? If it is, come forward. Make it known. You don't worry about ridicule. You don't worry about shame. You don't worry about somebody thinking something of you. But you have to remember that there's nothing more valuable, there's nothing worth more than your eternity and your ultimate salvation. Please come forward if you'd like to receive prayer. If you want to make Jesus Lord today, please come forward as we sing our song of invitation.